Hello, hello, everyone. You are listening to The Success Palette, a place to discuss everything that you are not taught in school about how to be successful in the arts. I'm your host, Soda, and today I have Megan DeVito, who is a life coach, to talk about anxiety when it comes to creativity, especially for those of us who are artists, writers, musicians. We tend to have a higher level of anxiety. And Megan is going to help us understand that a little bit more and how to cope with it. So first of all, yeah. Megan, how would you describe what anxiety is and how has it manifested in your life?
Woo! Wow. Okay. So this is a fun question. I think it really depends on the symptoms that show up for each person. Some people will tell you that anxiety is when I start thinking and I can't stop. Other people would say anxiety is this really horrible feeling that I have inside my body. And neither person's wrong. I really think that depending on how it shows up for you is exactly what it is. And whether those feelings come first or the thoughts come first, they kind of swirl around each other. So a lot of people will tell you, well, anxiety is just a feeling in your body and the thoughts are a symptom. And that may be true unless you notice your thoughts before you notice your feelings. So that's really how I would describe what anxiety is. And how this manifested in my life started is a very long story, actually. I have no idea how it started, but I know when it started. It started when I was in about third grade. And I remember always feeling sick and I went to this little tiny school. I've always lived in Indiana, and I went to this little teeny school, and there was a sick room, like where we would go lay down when we didn't feel well. And I wanted to go lay in there because I wanted to go home. I just knew I didn't feel good, and I felt better when I was at home. And so I would go lay down, and I remember getting a stack of papers back in about the third grade, and there was a sticky note on it that said, always sick. And I remember thinking, that was mean, but I also knew she was kind of right. So what happened was this feeling of, I think I always felt more nervous when my dad would go out of town on a trip. So I would want to be at home with my mom. And it just grew into some really disordered health anxiety that lasted until I was almost 40. And it changed. Like it would fluctuate. I would go through periods of time where it would feel better, where I didn't experience it as much. And then I would go through some really, really horrible times where I was having panic attacks and anxiety attacks and just like begging God to make it stop. Like I couldn't do it. And I didn't know what to do. So I just figured that something was wrong with me and I had no idea how to fix it. And this was like, I'm 48. So it was way back in the 80s when no one ever talked about mental health. Nobody really knew what it was. And it was just like, suck it up, buttercup. You're going to be fine. I was not fine at all. So that was really my whole history with it, was it just went up and down and everywhere. And it just infiltrated every single area of my life for like 30 years.
Wow. Like I could definitely relate to what you were saying about in high school, starting to feel that and you don't really know what it was. Cause I know my first panic attack was in a high school class, and it was a health class talking about bulimia and blood clots, I believe it. And I just started panicking and my face turned white and I started to go into shock. And they brought me to the health office and a police guy came and he thought I was on drugs and he was very, very mean about it. And was like, what did you take this morning? I'm going to call your parents and tell them you're a druggie. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And I started crying and it was such a horrible experience. And I think that was I don't know if that would be considered a panic attack or what exactly it is. Can you explain a little bit about what a panic attack might be or anxiety attack and the different ways that other people, because I know you were talking about some people feel the physical part first and then the mental or vice versa, but what are some of the physical symptoms and maybe some of the mental symptoms that we might have that might be anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a panic attack and an anxiety attack aren't the same thing. And I didn't know that for years. A panic attack is very finite. where it can, you can feel completely out of control. And this is where you might notice that your arms and legs might feel really numb or heavy or hot, but your heart is racing. You can't think. Some people say, I can't breathe. They feel like they're going to pass out. It's very immediate. And this is how people wind up in the emergency room, because you feel like you're having a heart attack or like you are going crazy. People will say, no, I'm going crazy. Something's wrong. I can't do anything. And it's just because your body, your nervous system just entirely goes into fight or flight like this. And when you're in that place of fight or flight, where really intense fight or flight, this is when we see old ladies flip cars off of people. Right. So we'll see, like, the little old lady goes up and just pulls the car up because she's got all of this adrenaline, all of this cortisol, and her brain is not thinking, because rationally, there's no way that lady should have been able to pick up that car. So we aren't able to think in that place, and we just go into all of this feeling, and it's terrifying, but it's also relatively short. I mean, considering what it could be, right? It's relatively short in the sense that maybe it lasts for 5 minutes, maybe it lasts for a half hour. But once it comes down, you're like, oh, I don't know what happened. And it was scary. And a lot of times just a panic attack alone can cause someone to become more anxious because they are terrified of ever feeling that way again. They're like, oh, I don't know what happened. And I'm so afraid I'm going to have to go back to the hospital. It can cause people to question whether their doctors were even correct. Like, they told me I was fine. There's no way I'm fine. I felt that and that happened. So they end up going back to the ER back over and over again. Anxiety attack is a little different. Yes, you can have an anxiety attack and have never had a panic attack, and you can have a panic attack that turns into an anxiety attack. Anxiety attacks last longer, and there's just a period of really heightened anxiety where you're in that fight or flight place, but not necessarily to the place of panic, where everything is terrifying. You're so anxious that, like, I can't go to work. I can't go to school. I don't know what to do. I'm just locked inside of my thoughts. But also you have all those feelings. And the feelings that I'm talking about really for anxiety can be different for everyone. There's not a right or wrong thing to feel. It's not where you would say, oh, well, you didn't have this system. That's not the thing. So it doesn't really work that way. It can be, like I said, a rapid heart rate. It can be feeling like you can't get a good breath of air. It can be tunnel vision. It can be noticing that your hands are shaking and they won't stop. For me, my first symptom was always that from, like, my forearm up to my fingertips would feel numb and just, I don't know how to describe it other than weird. That was always my first symptom. It can be constantly running to the bathroom because you can't digest food. You don't digest food when you're really anxious. It can be brain fog. It can be so many different things. But when you start understanding what's actually happening in your body at that point, it all makes so much more sense, because it's really just straight biology. It's like caveman style living is the best way I can describe it, where your brain just reacts and it's the fastest part. So it floods you with adrenaline. It floods you with cortisol. It pumps all of the blood out of your brain and into your arms and legs so you can run away really fast or fight something off or freeze and hide, but don't think about it too much. And it's really a survival mechanism. It's been there for millions of years and it just hasn't evolved. And when you're in that place, the front part of your brain, the thinking part of your brain, does not work. So the more we try to think, the more anxious we can become, because they're anxious thoughts and they're all reactionary. So that's really what happens. Did I answer your question? That was a
Absolutely.
Longer explanation, maybe.
Yes. You described it so well, because I'm always trying to explain to my husband, who doesn't have anxiety. And I'm like, I literally, my brain thinks that I am about to be attacked by a lion or something, even though it's just like, I need to make this phone call. But it's like my brain is sending me the signals and I feel like completely panicked. And so, yeah, I need to show him exactly what you said, because I love the way that you explained it. And it's interesting how most of the people I know who deal with a lot of anxiety are also very creative. My husband is more the accountant type, very logical, very, you know, steady. And I was wondering, is there any research that talks about why those of us who are creatives and very deep thinkers and artsy tend to experience anxiety in that in extreme ways compared to maybe someone who, you know, has a different kind of job.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of research, without actually going on and like researching, my best explanation for this is people who are anxious are more likely to be thinkers and more likely to be inquisitive and to be creative. And because anxiety is really made up stories that we're telling ourselves inside of our heads, and we're really diving into these, creative thinkers are creative thinkers. So the logical thinkers, it's not that they don't experience anxiety. It's that they might notice it more as the feeling. Whereas when we're a creative and when we are in that place where we're like, oh my gosh, but then I thought this, and then my brain came up with this. It's because your brain's already really good at creating new ideas and new thoughts. And that's where we get stuck in that loop where it's so much like, oh, but then I thought this next thought, and then I thought this next thought. We're writing stories that aren't really there because all the things that we fear the most, like the lion, that example of the lion, I think that's great. My brain thinks there's a lion there. And when your brain thinks, it believes what you think, even without evidence and even without proof and even without anything that would make it make sense. I like to joke that we would be really amazing horror movie writers. Like, we could scare everyone with the things that we tell ourselves, but maybe only the people who are afraid of the same things as us. But yeah, like when you look at the creativity factor of what it takes to come up with some of the stories that we can generate. I mean, for example, I had this thing when I was in college where I wouldn't shake anyone's hand. I told you I had health anxiety. And this was back in like the 80s and 90s. And I was terrified if I shook someone's hand, I would get AIDS. And so I was like, whoa, no, I am not doing that. I know it's irrational. I knew it was kind of irrational back then, but we were still learning. And I was horrified. Like, if I would do that, I would be like, what am I going to do? Like, I know there's probably like a cut that's magically healed in 2 seconds. And they were probably bleeding in the exact same spot. I would make up these stories that would just throw me into that what if nightmare. Like, well, what if this happens? What if that were true? What if this? And it's because we are creative that our brains can go there. Generally, I've seen some studies that say people who really struggle with the thinking part of the anxiety tend to be a little bit more, I don't want to say smarter, but yeah, I mean, if you can't create the story, if you can't process that information and extend it past where it is, it doesn't have anywhere to go. It doesn't grow. It doesn't make you as anxious. So I guess it's a blessing and a curse, yeah. Maybe.
That completely makes sense. And I don't know if the anxiety causes the, you know, creativity or the creativity causes the anxiety with the thinking of the stories and everything. I can completely relate to always being scared something is going to happen. What do we do in those situations wherein we are filled with all these what if, what if, what if? And like, how do we calm down from that?
Yeah, that's so good. So this is really the key, that if you can imagine being stuck in like a traffic circle where we're just going around and around and around, it's like, I think it, I feel it. I think it, I feel it. We have to create that exit ramp to get out of that circle because we can think and feel ourselves to death. And this is where, you know, the people that come in, they're like, oh, just calm down, think rationally. And you're like, shut up. That is not helping me at all. We cannot think our way out of it. As much as we would like to be rational and think our way out, it is impossible. And so what you really have to do is you have to sink into that really horrible feeling inside your body. But the thing that we know about anxiety is that nobody has ever died from anxiety. And we also know that nobody has had it forever nonstop without it stopping. It does stop. For some people, it stops for longer than others. But that feeling, if we can really learn to get familiar with the feeling inside of our body and to just call it for what it is, even though it's miserable and it doesn't feel good, because I'm not ever going to tell anybody like, oh, you'll get used to it. It'll feel fine. No, it's going to suck forever. But the more that you can go and be like, oh, okay, I know that when I'm anxious, I feel it in this spot. And when I feel it in this spot, it makes me feel however it is that it makes me feel. This is really some work that I go into when I'm coaching people, is let's talk about how it feels. Let's talk about where you feel it And we do this fun activity where I'll say, okay, close your eyes for a minute and go to that place. And I want you to use your imagination. I want you to tell me, what color is it? Like, what shape is it? Is it hot or is it cold? Is it spiky? Is it swirly? I've had people tell me it looks like wisps of smoke with fingers. It looks like a spiky hot ball. It looks like a red, giant red wave. They can describe it. They can tell me what it is. And I'm like, okay, now that it's not up in our heads anymore, now we can say, when I feel that hot, spiky purple ball in my sternum, I know it's anxiety. So when we can go in there and say, oh, I know what that is. I know what it is. Then I can tell myself anything that I think while I have this feeling inside my body, I'm not allowed to believe. So we just create this wall or gate that we can put up and say, when that feeling goes away, then I can start to think again. Then I can say, okay, the feeling's gone. I'm allowed to start believing a little bit more of what I think, but really just recognizing that when I'm in this place where everything feels that way, everything I think is garbage at that point. Even if there's a hint of truth, we're not going to believe it until we feel calm. And then we can start saying, is that actually true? And start picking it apart. Because if you try to do it when you're anxious, you'll just keep making yourself feel more anxious and producing more of the adrenaline and more of the cortisol, and it lasts longer. So really the easiest answer I can give is you have to go into your body and out of your head and just recognize that I've felt this before. I hate every second of this, but I'm going to sit in it. Another thing that can really help is just once you know where that spot is for you, is putting your hand on it. And if you can imagine, like, even closing your eyes and imagine breathing into that spot underneath your hand, like, I'm going to breathe right into that spot and I'm going to blow out right from that spot, and really pushing more air out than you're breathing in. A lot of times people say, it's okay, take a deep breath, and we'll breathe in. But what we really, really need to focus on instead is exhaling. It's really more about the exhale than it is about the inhale. So if you can imagine blowing all of your air out till you're squished as flat as a pancake even from that spot, and then breathing back in and doing that for a little bit, and you'll notice that that spot really starts to go away. And then you can think clearly and say, oh, okay, I'm feeling better. But it's really about the exhale.
I really, really like what you said about how you can't explain yourself out of anxiety. You know it's irrational. And
oh, yeah.
I haven't tried that exact method. I really like that. So I'm going to try that next. And yeah. I know that you work a lot with creatives with anxiety. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that you have seen anxiety hinder them in their creative pursuits? Because a lot of my listeners are creative entrepreneurs and they do experience anxiety. What are some things, ways that anxiety is stopping a lot of your clients from succeeding?
Mm-hmm. So two that I'm thinking about specifically right now have very, very different creative jobs. I think in some sense, we're all a little bit creative, but I'm working with one person who is a playwright and another person who is more of like a creative, like production person, like doing more on that end. And both of them experience it very, very differently. One way that I think I see not just creatives, but people who are in finance and everything else, is that they get very, very concerned about, like, I can't think. And so for creatives, especially when you're in that production block where you're like, I'm trying to write, I'm trying to draw, I'm trying to paint, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to make music, I'm trying to do all of these things, but I have writer's block. Like, nothing is coming to me. And so because we're in that place where it's really hard to create something beautiful or create something like with your imagination when your imagination is completely tied up on keeping you alive and safe. If you can imagine that part of your brain that controls your anxiety is just like a really like rabid middle school girl who is out just making everything so much worse than it needs to be, like screaming at everything all the time, like, you're gonna die, you're gonna die. That's really how dramatic it is. So really cutting off their ability to think creatively, sometimes in ways of saying like, whatever you do won't be as good as what they did. And so it can be really sneaky. And the thoughts that are underneath the reason that you feel anxious maybe might be like, well, you know what? That person over there who does the same thing as you, they're so much better and you'll never be able to do it that good. That can cause a lot of anxiety just from us trash talking ourselves and those things. So back to the comparison idea of, yeah, I can't do that because it's not like what that person does. I see that a lot. I also see limitations that people put on themselves where that's really not the way it's done, which I think is so interesting with creatives because one of the things that they're so good at is having new ways of doing things. And thank goodness, I mean, whether you're an inventor or anything else, thank goodness that you have new ways to do it. But it's easy to hide in the idea of, but that's not the way it's done. And to look for that, well, I need to do it this way for it to be, you know, for it to be valuable or to be something that people will be interested in. Like this is what, for people, especially for the people who are creative, like creative entrepreneurs, that won't sell because it's too different. It's too, like people won't understand what I'm saying. So we have these little thoughts that can get sneaky in there about how, you know, how it might make me look if I created this thing. What would people think? So, you know, so first of all, we're comparing ourselves sometimes to someone like, you know, maybe it's like Baryshnikov. If you're a dancer, you're like, I will never ever be as good as that guy. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. You know, I'm not Taylor Swift. I'm not Renoir. I'm not all of these people. And I'm like, okay, but there's one of those and you get to be your own person. So I do see it come up a lot when people are really worried about comparing themselves to other people, but also just judging their own work before they ever put it out into the world and thinking, you know, this is so bad. What will people think of me as a creative? Like, what would people think about me if they saw this? This is so bad. And that really, that thought just builds more anxiety because you know that you have this urge to create something, but you also are already telling yourself that it's terrible before you ever do it. So the self-talk thing is really, really big, I think, for creatives.
Absolutely. There is a huge problem with comparison in a lot of these creative communities. And I definitely agree that that can really cause a lot of this anxiety. Another thing in my life is just having my basic needs met when I'm going through times where I don't have money for food. I'm worried that I could even pay my rent.
It yes.
definitely increases. How does the hierarchy of needs and income and maybe discrimination for people who maybe in a certain demographic, how does that affect anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in terms of the hierarchy of needs, right, we're always going to have those baseline needs that have to be fulfilled first. And so for years, before I was a coach, before I was doing anything, I was a teacher in a school for at-risk teenagers. So most of my students who I taught were at or below poverty level, had lots of craziness going on at home. And so what we know about how the brain works and how the brain can be creative is that when you are in that place where I don't have food, I don't know if I can pay to keep my electricity on. I don't know if I can keep myself safe or whatever it is in that place. Those things are always going to take precedent in your brain because of the way that your brain functions. So you will go more into that limbic system where you're in that level of fight or flight. Like, will I have food? That's going to take over your brain space so much more than what can I create today? Because this is survival and this is, you know, higher up on that hierarchy, I suppose. We have those baseline needs that we have to have. So if it's more of a thought that I have a feeling of scarcity, whether the scarcity is real or not, like sometimes we have scarce feelings when we're not actually in a place of scarcity. Other times we really are in a place where everything is scarce, but your brain will react the same way either time. If you think there's scarcity, if you tell yourself this will run out, you will throw yourself back into a place of scarcity. And so when that scarcity is actually real, of course we want to fill that need first, because once those needs are met, then your brain opens up to more scarcity. But in the meantime, in order to be maybe create what you need to create and to put out in the world to fill that place, like I just need to create this thing so that I can make money, so I can fill that need, you really can work on the relaxation techniques and finding places where am I safe right now? Like, how am I going to be okay today as opposed to when I think even tomorrow? Like, if I don't think about tomorrow and I think about right now, how am I okay right now? And going into just like the present moment. And that goes to that idea of practicing mindfulness, which I think there's a, maybe this is just my perception. It feels like when we talk about mindfulness, people think something's supposed to happen. Or I'm going to practice mindfulness and it's going to be like some YouTube video with like all of these like swirly thoughts and ideas, when really mindfulness is like, if I am sitting at this desk in my office right now, what can I see? What am I doing? What can I feel? Am I safe right now in this second? And if I could go back to that place of, are my basic needs in this exact moment met? And as soon as your brain says, yes, but what about tomorrow? Wait, but right now, I am safe. And it's pulling yourself back because you're right. I mean, I could walk out of my house and get hit by a bus, but I'm not as worried about that because I could be like, oh, well, that's not a problem. But if I can stay right here and be like, right now I'm safe, it's okay. And in the next moment, what's going on? I'm still safe.
Yes, yes. And I love what you were saying about when almost like we get stuck when we are in a place of scarcity, in a place of fear, and we don't focus on the present. We focus on what might happen, and then we can't fix our situation if we're constantly scared. I know for me, I spent years of being stuck because I was so focused on the anxieties of what might happen tomorrow, and I didn't take the calculated risks that I needed to take and the action to move forward. What are some ways that we can kind of get past that fear of taking action and taking those calculated risks out of our fears and anxieties that, oh, it might not happen, so I'm just going to stay safe and stay stuck and not. And then you stay in that situation where you're constantly stressed out.
I love calculated risk. I think that's so good. And you just made my brain explode when you said that. I'm like, oh, calculated risk. So this was kind of on my mind this morning anyway. I'm like, okay, what am I actually afraid of? Like, I've had all of these big ideas about this thing that I wanted to create. And I've put it off forever because I'm like, I have all these stories inside my head about like, oh, this will suck. Nobody will want to do this. This, what if I can't do it? What if I'm terrible at it? So the running dialogue that happens when we're anxious, right? Like, I'm trying to keep myself away from it. I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be disappointed. I don't want to look stupid. I don't want to have people tell me that this is ridiculous. So I'm like, oh, okay, so I won't do that. Calculated risk. When we talk about that, there's risk in everything. For most things, there is risk. And your brain's number one job is to avoid it at all costs. I talked about how your brain runs like in caveman mode, but if you can actually picture a tiny little caveman inside of your head that is bossing you around all day long and it has no idea that it's 2024, it still thinks it's like something BC way, way back. If you can imagine that guy and they're just like always trying to keep you from doing anything that could make you feel anything negative or anything bad, anything that could ever possibly happen. If you're going to be embarrassed, that will kill you. If you're going to be, if you're going to go outside and the sun hits you, that will kill you. Whatever it is that it wants to tell you, it reacts and reacts and reacts. So when we talk about calculated risk, a lot of people who are anxious really like rock solid statistics. I have noticed this with myself. I've noticed it with other people. Like, what are the odds? And you can use those odds for yourself or against yourself. So when we get to that place where like, what if, if the question is, well, what if I do this and this happens? Answer the question for yourself. What if it did? What if that actually happened? What would you do about it? How would you like, what if that happened? And because when we think about the things that we're not willing to risk, what if I'm embarrassed? Okay, what if you are embarrassed? Then what? What would you do if you were embarrassed? And for me, it would be like, well, I would be embarrassed and it would feel really embarrassing. But what is it that I'm actually, am I willing to feel that to have what I want to do, like to have what I want? Am I willing to feel anxious to create this amazing song that I want to write? Am I willing to feel judged to make this website or this beautiful piece of art or to do whatever it is that I want to do? Am I willing to go there? And then if the answer is I'm absolutely not willing to feel it, then maybe that's your answer. And then be able to cut yourself some slack and say, okay, that's not for me then. That's just not my thing. And we get, you know, calculated risk, when we look at what we're actually calculating, a lot of times it comes off of emotions that we're not willing to feel. And if the worst thing that happens to you is that you feel an emotion, are you willing to feel that?
Yeah.
That's really important.
I think,
yeah.
Because a lot of these embarrassing things, like there's some that could cause really traumatize you if it's embarrassed in front of, you know, certain situations. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we tend to forget about a lot of our embarrassing moments, especially if you're able to have help with a professional. And I know with me working with professionals, I've really been able to change my life. And I'm curious, though, what is the difference between working with maybe a therapist or some other sort of, maybe an art therapist or a life coach? What are some different ways that people can get help if they're dealing with anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's definitely different levels of anxiety, right? Like you can have this underlying anxiety that never really goes away, where you're really stressed out a lot of the time, and it just keeps you on edge and anxious and grouchy and snappy. And it's like you never quite get relaxed and out of that fight or flight state, but you're not to the place where you have like a panic disorder, where you're panicking multiple times a day, or an anxiety disorder, where you're really just so locked inside of yourself. Those are two different things. So in terms of what I would explain the difference between, say, therapy and coaching, therapy is, I think, really, really excellent at, if you know you went through something, happened that was either a big T kind of trauma, or it was like a series of smaller traumas that built up, that you're like, no, I know that I have this stuff in the past that I need to work through. I need to talk this out in terms of this situation or this experience that I had in my past. If that's happening, that is definitely a therapeutic thing where you want to go, you know, if we're talking about self-harm, if we're talking about like, I am in this place where I am like, I need some sort of like a more intensive internal healing therapy. Yes, 100%. And I've had clients that I've worked with that I'm like, hey, yes, we can work together, but the deal is we only work together if you are also seeing a therapist. Because as a coach, and I may use a lot of tactics that they use in therapy, but I am not in the place where I'm like, okay, we're in this self-harm kind of area. Like that's not my place. So for coaching, so for the people that I work with, or most of the coaches that I know that are not also therapists, even though like I have trauma-informed training, I have all of that stuff, it is more of a, okay, here we are. We know that you're anxious. We know that you have these things that like my creativity is getting sucked out of me. I am feeling grouchy and anxious. Like even if they've had a panic attack, or they're like, look, I am getting to the point where it's like, I don't even want to go to work anymore because it's making me so anxious. If we're at that place, coaching can really help with that, because this is more about like, okay, let's talk about how can we really get familiar with that feeling in your body and start using it as like a notification on your phone, where we can say, oh, you feel this? Let's just step back for a minute and let's calm your body down so that we can start looking at what those underlying thoughts are that are keeping you anxious. So I think therapy in itself is very good at healing the past, especially if you have trauma. It's super necessary. Coaching is more of a, we are here right now and we're moving forward. It's very goal-directed. It's very, you know, a couple of the creatives I mentioned earlier, one of them is that I just want to feel more positive and not so afraid to do the things that I want to do. I have one that she's a playwright. She's like, she's working through the loss of a parent, but she's also trying to really feel more confident in herself and her abilities. And I love it when I'm working with these people who are like, she just sold a couple of plays to like these huge, like she got some major, I don't even know the award what it was, but she wrote this play, she's winning this award, and then she's telling me how like horrible she is. And I'm like, stop right now. So those are the things I'm like, I'm going to tell you why you feel so anxious. It's because you talk so negatively about yourself so much of the time. So those kinds of things, moving her forward to a place where she's not afraid to take those calculated risks. Like, are you willing to put this play out into the world and let people watch it and see what they think about it? Are you willing to put this production on with these kids? Like, she has a children's theater. Are you willing to do this with these kids? And let it be crazy. Let it be that way instead of being absolutely perfect. Like, we aren't looking for a Broadway production here, right? So really looking at where she's moving forward, or are you willing to go after that next level in your career if it means that you have to create this, whatever it is that has to be put out there, you know, like for creating a movie, creating a TV show, that like, this is where it has to go. And then you have to sell it to different, you know, different production agencies. Are you willing to go there? And to say, I know you feel anxious, and I feel like, no, you feel like you're going to throw up, and that you have all these stories about, I won't eat, I won't have a job, I will do that. Is that really true? Or is that just your brain trying to keep you from taking that step? So really moving forward is coaching. Looking backwards and therapy that way would be like with therapy. Yeah.
That's a really, really good way to distinguish it, because I was kind of a little confused in my head. So I appreciate that clarity. Mm-hmm. And if anyone is having feelings of self-harm or anything like that, I am going to put some resources down below, some links. Please get help. We want to make sure that you are safe and healthy, and remember, you have value. Now, before we end, I do want to ask, you mentioned one of the techniques earlier. I was wondering if you had any other simple, just very quick techniques and practices that we could do just throughout our day that might help lessen the amount of anxiety that we have. And also, please let us know where we can find you on social media, your website, if we want to contact you with more information.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll give you two. One of them I actually did when I was shopping for throw pillows in Target. Nobody will ever know. You can do it at work. You can do it in your car. You can do it in the middle of class. Nobody will know that you are doing this. And it's just a different way to think about breathing. I told you before that everybody will say, just breathe, and everybody wants to breathe in. If you can move from a place where you're like trying to breathe like that and really focus on I would call it almost like a metered breathing, or paying attention to what this is. I've done this when I'm driving my car. It's not distracting. You're already breathing. It's like, we breathe all the time. Nobody knows, because we're all doing it. So I've done this with lots and lots of people, just to say, okay, when you notice that you're starting to feel anxious, always start with the exhale. And I would say blow as much air out as you can. And then we're going to inhale slowly through your nose for 5 seconds. So we're going to go breathe in for 5 seconds, hold your breath for 5 seconds, and then exhale for 7 seconds, and then pause. And wait until you need to breathe in. And then we go back again, whatever your natural breath is, so that you're not, you know, you're not like in the middle of Target. You're just breathing normally. I'm going to breathe in for 5. I'm going to hold it for 5. And then I'm going to exhale for 7. And just making sure that exhale goes out longer. So I will tell you that if 5-5-7 is, the numbers are too big for you, try 4-4-6. Try 3-3-5. The numbers don't matter. It's really more about exhaling longer than you inhale and letting your brain reset, because what that does is it clears all of that used oxygen that gets that carbon dioxide out of your body and brings in fresh oxygen. When you do that, you are throwing your nervous system from sympathetic into parasympathetic. So if you can imagine, you have two separate nervous systems. The sympathetic nervous system is fight or flight. It is react, it is anger, it is snappy, it is fast, it is rushed, it is not thinking. It's where we start building up into that more like, I'm really anxious, I feel like I'm in a panic. Your parasympathetic is your rest and digest and relax system. It's where your body is able to process food. You can think clearly. Your shoulders come down a little bit and you can actually breathe in. And when you can take yourself out of that state and into the other state, you're moving yourself from an anxious place to a calm place. And it's really as simple as exhaling, really focusing on that. So we can even practice that now if you want. Like I'll do it with you for a little bit. Are you doing it?
I was saying I'm like practicing while you're doing that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like, so breathe in for.
Yeah. So I do 5-5-7. Some people do 4-4-6-3-3-5, but it's like, if you can imagine, look at my pen, 5-5-7, almost like a 5-5-7 and whatever that is. So for me, I would say breathe in, hold, exhale. And then I would pause until I need another breath. And I would breathe in, hold, exhale.
I already feel better.
It's like, oh. And when you do that, not only does it redirect your brain away from what it's thinking about and how you feel, but it's also literally changing your nervous system over to a restful place. That's one. Another thing that I really like, and since there are creatives that are in your audience, is I really, really love journaling. Some people think it's corny and weird, and it's not. It's like so, so good, especially if you notice that right before you go to bed, your brain likes to go into high gear, and suddenly you're laying there and all the thoughts come in at once and you notice you're getting anxious. There's something really powerful about writing them on a piece of paper, especially with colorful pens, which I really like, in writing those anxious thoughts down on a piece of paper, on a journal. I don't even care if you write them on a sticky note. I've had clients who I just said, you just need to keep a pad of sticky notes next to your bed. And when you wake up in the night with a thought, I want you to write it on the sticky note and say, I will think about that first thing in the morning. Shove it on your alarm clock, on your phone or whatever, and then roll over. Because when you take it out of your head and you put it onto paper, it becomes concrete. It doesn't have room to grow anymore. It's like, I had this fear and I wrote it down, and then you look at it and there it is. You can literally set it aside and say, tomorrow I will deal with that first thing. And it just has this way of moving it out of your brain so that you can go back to sleep. And that 5-5-7 thing is a really great way. It's like counting sheep. It's a great way to get yourself to relax at night too. But especially for people who notice they're more anxious before they try to sleep, being able to write those thoughts down and say, tomorrow I'm dealing with these. And a lot of times we wake up and we're like, what happened last night that I was thinking this stuff? Tired brains are anxious brains, and they generate so much garbage. So, so much garbage. Our brains have like 60,000 thoughts a day, and maybe 2% of them are real. Most of them are habits, and they're just random thoughts that flow through.
Yeah. And I've noticed, in addition to writing down, sometimes I'll do a voice message to myself.
Yeah.
And that sometimes helps too when I'm like maybe not in a place where I can write. So just wanted to throw that out there. And yeah. So, and then where can we find you if we want to get more information?
Find me all over the internet. I have a website. It's just my first and last name. It's megandevito.com. No H, just regular Megan, M-E-G-A-N, DeVito.com. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. It's Coach Megan DeVito on Instagram, but also on Facebook, Threads. And I am Megan DeVito on LinkedIn. No coach, just Megan DeVito on LinkedIn. So just about anywhere. And if anyone has any questions, please don't feel shy about, I mean, my DMs are always open. So if you're like, hey, I have a question, please ask. There is no reason for everybody to keep walking around feeling as anxious as we are. And I think one of the great things is that once you find something that works for you, you have something else that you can share with somebody else to help them. And as soon as you recognize that, like, oh, wait, this really is anxiety, then you can say, no, I know what's going on. The more people that help more people, we can knock this out, because it is crazy out there with people who are struggling with anxiety, especially since the pandemic. And I really, really, truly believe that, especially as parents, that we can look and see our kids, and we once we help ourselves, we know how to help them. It's that whole idea of being on the airplane and putting your mask on first. Once you figure it out, you can help your babies. And that's amazing because there is nothing worse than watching your kids feel anxious. Like, I've got four kids and I've helped all four of them at least once with big time anxiety attacks. And I'm so grateful that I knew what to do to help them, because it's awful to see your kids do that. Just terrible.
Yeah, mine is four now, so she hasn't gotten to that stage yet. But even now, I'm like, oh, I want to, you know, and understanding what your child is going through helps so much when you're actually, you know, helping them get through it. But yes, thank you so much again
for
all of this. Like, I've been studying anxiety a lot, and some of the stuff you've said I've never thought of before. So I really appreciate that.
Thanks for joining me on this week's episode of The Success Palette. Head over to thesuccesspalette.com for additional links to social media platforms and also some bonus episodes. I hope you make this week a successful one.
I think I'm ready to feel better now. I think I'm ready to open my heart again. I think I'm ready to trust there's still some good in this world. Please God, just keep me safe. I'm scared. My chest is tight and my palms are sweating as I think of you. I wonder if I'm ready to fight away these fears that haunt me every night and day. Memories I just wish would grow.